We're going to do this on my terms. I'm in control here, and you're going to give me what I want.
Dave, look, I don't know what you're talking about, okay?
Give me what I want.
I really don't know what you're talking about.
You know what I want. I've been asking for it for years.
I think that you think that's what you want, but you don't really want that.
Give me what I want!
I do a mean Russo impression. How about I do that?
That's not what I want! Give me what I want!
Okay.
Give me what I want!
Okay, fine. You win. But remember, you asked for this.
On the 4th of July, 1806, we set sail from the sweet cove of Cork. We were sailing away with a cargo of bricks for the Grand City Hall in New York. 'Twas a wonderful craft, she was rigged fore and aft, and oh, how the wild winds drove her. She'd got several blasts, she'd 27 masts, and we called her the Irish Rover.
It's all I've ever wanted. It's business time, baby.
The Solar Monster sounds off.
My client!
Mama Monster!
Conquered the street!
We like fighting a woman?
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
Come over here and fight me!
Delete! You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
Happy St. Paddy's Day. That was my rendition of the Irish Rover. From Sound Off episode 319, I thought it would be appropriate to hear it again today. If you're wondering why I sang the Irish Rover in the first place, it was after Sheamus once sang it when he showed up on NXT to wrestle Aiden English. Plus, I just really liked the song. I thought it had a nice beat to it. But this was a good week for Big Dave. He got what he wanted in a WrestleMania match against Triple H. He got what he wanted with James Gunn being reinstated as the director for the third Guardians of the Galaxy film. And his buddy cop action movie, Stuber, which comes out in July, got rave reviews at the South by Southwest Film Festival. It actually sounds like a lot of fun if you read up on the premise of the movie. I don't go to the movies as much, but I am going this Friday. I've got my ticket to go see that new Jordan Peele movie, Us. I love Get Out. This one looks pretty good, too. This is episode 590 of the Solar Monster Sounds Off here for St. Patrick's Day Sunday, March 17th, 2019. I am the Solar Monster. I follow podcasting news each week, as all podcasters should. And I read that for the first time ever, a majority of people in this country say that they have tuned into a podcast at least once in their lives, 51%. Spotify apparently had a lot to do with that when it came to the younger demographics, so hello to all you Spotify people out there, and iHeartRadio and everybody else. We're getting close to our Sound Off the Wagon meetup, Friday, April 5th, starting at 2 p.m. That's a couple days before WrestleMania, the day of the NXT TakeOver show in Brooklyn. It's going to be at the King's Beer Hall, the KBH. We've been there a whole bunch of times. Nice, big spot, fun spot there. We'll have drink specials. And between the people who have RSVP'd so far on Facebook, we've got almost 40 solid. We've got another 50 who are interested. That doesn't include the people who don't use Facebook who have contacted me. So right now we're looking at close to, if not even slightly over, 100 people coming through at some point that afternoon. I don't think everybody will be there all at once. So come on down. Friday, April 5th, 2 p.m. It's only a few blocks away from the Barclays Center. And like a lot of you, at the end of the meetup, around 6 o'clock or so, I'm going to be walking over to the Barclays Center for the show. So hopefully I will see you guys there. Also, there is an ongoing sale on ProWrestlingTees.com now through tomorrow. So through Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern, you can get 15% off all shirts in our Sound Off store, ProWrestlingTees.com/SolemonsterSoundsOff. Just use the promo code MADNESS. It is the March Madness sale, so promo code MADNESS will get you 15% off. And I want to say thank you to all of the kind people who donated and contributed in some way to the podcast this week. Of course, you can always make a PayPal donation if you so choose on thesolemonster.com. PayPal button is on the right-hand side of the page. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out. Deadpool, James Herrera, back off the DL, all healed up. Welcome back. Chuck Lunatic Lentz, the Portland pop star Paul Hamilton, John Loose Cannon Lopez, the Florida Freebird Brian Becerra, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, the Malaysian Mastermind Samuel T, Stephen Handyman Halistick, the Chicago Slayer Willie Eicher, the Chicago Screamer Ian Noel Camelotes, we got two Chicago dwellers here, the Anarchist Andrew Heller, Brian the Cleaver Carpenter. We've got the Macho Messiah, A.C. Smith, the Maryland Madman, Donald Murphy, the Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soap, Black Death, Justin Hesse, thank you very much, Mean Matt Forbush, Recon, Russell Bulware, and the Impact Player, Andrew Portillo, also the Reaper of Wayward Souls, Eric Flood, wishing you a very happy birthday this coming Wednesday from your wife, Sheila. And Baby Seamus, and from myself as well. I hope it's a great one. She tells me that you've been a listener for about 7 years, so I gave you a nickname with seven syllables. Also, shout out to Rusty, Rude and Crude Scott, Jose Spikehammer Camacho, Mohammed, Lame Ass Fan, and also get well soon to Cordaro. So thank you to everybody again who has contributed in some way, shape, or form. Kevin Nash is hosting his annual shenanigans party over WrestleMania weekend at McHale's Pub. It's just a few blocks away from Madison Square Garden. This is following the ROH New Japan show on Saturday, April 6th, starting at 11 p.m. Official guest list now includes Al Snow, Melina, Katie Forbes. There's going to be a lot more to come. Unofficial guests include, and these are going to be people making the rounds at the party, Rikishi, Val Venus, Terry Runnels, D'Lo Brown, Tonga Kid, DJ Z, and more. Platinum VIP is now sold out, but Gold VIP and general admission tickets are still available. Gold VIP will get you free drinks. It'll get you access to the VIP lounge with all of the official guests. Just use the promo code SOLOMONSTER to get 10% off Gold VIP and general admission tickets. You can buy them on Facebook at facebook.com/PWRshow. And then look under the events tab, or you could just type in bit.ly/shenanigansNYC. I remember bumping into Muhammad Hassan at the bar at one of these parties a few years ago. You never know who you might find lurking around. We've got some updates on the New Japan Cup and the Madison Square Garden show coming up on April 6th. So we know that this year the winner of the New Japan Cup will challenge Jay White for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship at MSG. We've got 1 week left in the New Japan Cup. The finals take place next Sunday. If you are not caught up yet, and you do not want spoilers on the last few days of the New Japan Cup, which resumes later this week, I'm warning you now, skip ahead by a few minutes, or go watch those shows first, and then come back and listen to the podcast. But again, you've been warned. So far as the names that have advanced in the tournament, we have Okada, Tanahashi, Will Ospreay, Zack Sabre Jr., Tomohiro Ishii, and Yoshihashi have all advanced. I might be missing a name or two, but I think that pretty much is where we are at this point. I have not had time to go watch all of the cup matches yet, but I did see a few of the key ones. I saw Kota Ibushi against Tetsuya Naito from day three, which I thought was excellent. Naito hit a sit-out tombstone pile driver on the apron on a man who's had neck surgery. But that was not enough to finish off Kota Ibushi. Ibushi hit the Ibushi driller and the Kamigoye. He won, advanced to face Zack Sabre Jr. in the next round. This was day seven. And he tapped out Kota Ibushi with his napalm death finish. Or I guess the full name, it's orienteering with napalm death, which is owned for short. It's a nice little acronym there. I just call it napalm death. But he tapped him out, and so with that, there goes my pick. I picked Kota Ibushi to win the entire thing, and here he is tapping out to Zack Sabre Jr. I was shocked. I really was. I was shocked. And it was Sabre who beat Ibushi and bounced him from the tournament last year in the New Japan Cup. So now that makes 2 years in a row that Sabre has taken care of Ibushi. And so now I would think it's got to be Okada. Okada was my number two. He's still in it. I think he's the one that you want going to that championship match at Madison Square Garden. Now, I watched Okada's win. He had a win in this tournament over Mikey Nichols, formerly Nick Miller of TM61 in NXT. He had opted many months ago to leave NXT. He was not fired. He was not released. He chose to go back home, and now he's in New Japan. I thought it was a basic match. Certainly not at the level of the top matches in this tournament. It was fine. I mean, there was nothing wrong with it, but it wasn't terribly exciting. It was pretty much just an easy win for Okada. And so that's where things stand with the New Japan Cup. Now, Marty Scurll announced this week that he is cashing in his ROH world title opportunity that he earned late last year by winning the Survival of the Fittest tournament. He will be doing so against both Jay Lethal, the current champion, and Matt Taven in a triple threat ladder match at the G1 Supercard at MSG. Lethal and Taven went to a 60-minute draw Friday night at the Ring of Honor 17th anniversary show, which is why he has been added to the match. Yeah, I've seen people online claiming that Marty's contract is up in April and then he'll be AEW bound. Look, I think it's a foregone conclusion. He's probably going to be AEW bound when his contract is up, but I'm of the impression that his contract may extend into the summer or the fall. I don't know that it's over next month, you know, and he'll be able to show up at Double or Nothing. I think he's going to still be around for a while. So I would not say for the people assuming that because of that, there's no way he's going to win at the Garden. I don't think that's a foregone conclusion at all. In fact, I might even favor him to be the favorite right now. But that's the update on that championship match. Some other updates here. PCO and Brody King, they beat the Briscoes on Friday night to win the ROH Tag Team titles, and they will now defend those titles against the IWGP Tag Team Champions, the Guerrillas of Destiny. Both sets of tag team belts will be on the line. 25 years after defending the WWF Tag Team titles inside Madison Square Garden at WrestleMania 10, PCO defends the ROH Tag Team titles inside Madison Square Garden. That's pretty cool. 51 years young this guy is. Jeff Cobb, he has challenged Will Ospreay for a title-for-title match at MSG. Cobb will put his Ring of Honor television title on the line, provided that Ospreay, he puts his never open-weight title on the line. That kind of gives away, I think, the result of the New Japan Cup match, which is coming up on Wednesday between Ospreay and Okada. I have to think most people have Okada now pegged to go all the way with this. And yes, technically, I guess Ospreay could pull double duty at the Garden, but he won't. So I think that kind of spoils that match outcome. Also at MSG, Dalton Castle will wrestle Roosh, and Bully Ray has issued an open challenge to someone. Won't say who, but an open challenge to a mystery man for a New York City street fight. So those are your MSG updates. Now let's get into Raw from this past Monday. Now we're going to dive right into Raw and SmackDown here. Not going to waste any time. Twitter poll had over 2,700 votes. 47% thumbs up, 53% thumbs down. So not a great score for Raw Monday night. Not a great score for not a great show. Harlem Heat, Booker T and Stevie Ray, they are the latest inductees announced for the Class of 2019 WWE Hall of Fame. Booker T now joins Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels as a two-time Hall of Fame inductee. He went in solo back in 2013. And was inducted by his brother. Now his brother gets to join him. Actually, I think when Booker went in, I believe that was the year they were at MetLife for WrestleMania. So if that's the case, I'm guessing the Hall of Fame was probably at the Barclays Center. So in the same place that Booker went into the Hall of Fame and his brother inducted him, they now both go in to the Hall of Fame together. Same city, probably same building. They've won 14 tag team titles in their career. 10 in WCW, 3 in Global, and 1 in Booker's Reality of Wrestling promotion 4 years ago. They used to be the Ebony Experience under the late Gary Hart. Sid Vicious is the one who really gave them their big break. And Harlem Heat, or at least I've heard Stevie Ray, back that story up and give Sid full credit for it. Sid was the one, he saw them on television. Sid was working for WCW at the time. He was the one, again, who got them into the company. And his idea for how to debut them was to have them come in as prisoners, straight out of jail. Sid tells the story, and Stevie backs him up on this. The idea was that the governor at the time, I think the governor of Louisiana, I want to say, as a shoot, apparently was known at that time for being a big gambler. So, in storyline, the storyline was that he loses a bet, or a card game, or whatever, to Colonel Robert Parker. You all remember Colonel Robert Parker? If not, he was in WCW as a manager. He was in WWE briefly as Tennessee Lee in the Attitude Era. Did not fit in at all. Just, he looked like a relic from something that you would have seen in WWE when managers were a lot more plentiful than they were even in the late 90s. He looked like someone who would have fit in perfectly in that late 80s, early 90s WWF kind of golden era period. He looked out of place in the Attitude Era, just like they did that whole angle with the NWA. Jeff Jarrett was the NWA champion, and they had the new, what was it, Bombastic Bob and Bullshit Bart or something, the new Midnight Express. It just didn't work. It just didn't work. But he was the good old boy. He was dressed in the white suit. He had the cigar in his mouth. He had the white hat. And so, as part of the storyline, the governor loses a bet to Colonel Robert Parker. And instead of taking the money, Colonel Parker says, look, I have proven how great of a manager that I am with Sid Vicious. I want to prove that I could take two nobodies, two convicts, and turn them into stars. Right? I want to make chicken salad out of chicken shit, is basically the idea of the storyline. Well, enter Booker and Stevie. They were called Kane and Cole at the time. And in their infinite wisdom, when they came out for their debut, in the infinite wisdom of WCW, that is, when these two guys came out for their debut, and I don't believe this ended up making television because the Turner folks flipped the fuck out, and rightfully so, and there's no footage of this anywhere, but you have Booker and you have Stevie walk to the ring in chains and their prison uniforms. So like when Nails debuted in WWF and beat up the Big Boss Man, he was still wearing his whole, you know, the orange jumpsuit with the prison number on it. Which I always wondered, why, if he was released from jail, they had all these vignettes on television for weeks and weeks and weeks saying, Boss Man, I'm getting out soon. If he's getting out, why would he be wearing his... whatever. So anyway, I see I apply too much logic sometimes to these situations. But these two guys come out in chains with Colonel Parker behind them, cigar in his mouth, crowing about his new boys, basically walking out there like a slave owner right off the plantation. It sounds awful just talking about it. The fact that they actually sent them out there like that, you know, that nobody thought to stop them before they went out there, even then, for that time, because I don't want to hear, well, it was a different time. No, even for that time, is absolutely mind-boggling. Just mind-bogglingly stupid. So that got dropped real quick, because of course they realized, well, why the fuck are we doing this? So there were no more chains, no more prison outfits, and they became Harlem Heat. They put Sister Sherry Martel with them as their manager. 10 tag team titles in WCW. Now, years later, when Stevie was out with an ankle injury, Booker got his first singles run. He won the television title a bunch of times. He had that great best of seven series, the best series of matches, I think, maybe of his career, certainly of his time in WCW, with Chris Benoit. Which, unfortunately, if they ever make a Booker T DVD, I guess we won't be able to see that on there. Or maybe we will. I'm guessing not. So Stevie then, when he was back, he ends up forming his own faction. And they called themselves Harlem Heat 2000. Booker is not part of this. So we have Harlem Heat 2000. Anything as a rule of thumb with 2000 in the name, you know it sucked. Techno Team 2000. LOD 2000, WrestleMania 2000, and Harlem Heat 2000. This was the infamous storyline where Booker lost the rights to use the letter T in his name. He was feuding with Ahmed Johnson, who they were calling Big T at this point, emphasis on the word big, over the rights to the letter T. They even brought in Clarence Mason. Remember him? From WWE. Here they called him, I think, Mr. Biggs or something to that effect. And he threatened Booker with a copyright infringement lawsuit if he continued to use the letter T in his name, because Booker T, you see, was part of the Harlem Heat Act. And they owned Harlem Heat now, not him. He was no longer part of Harlem Heat, so therefore he could not call himself T. I guess Booker was fine. Maybe they thought he was using it as a descriptive term. I don't think Booker T was ever booking in WCW, but he could not use the letter T. This was a real storyline. WCW had these guys feud over a letter in the alphabet. WCW would be DOA 2 years after this. LOL. So, Booker reverted back to his old G.I. Bro gimmick. He used that very early in his career. He was G.I. Bro for a while, and after all of this nonsense and all of this bullshit, he eventually went back to being Booker T, and he became WCW champion. Now, Stevie, towards the end there in WCW, he did some announcing for them. I actually remember him being pretty entertaining on commentary. He did some announcing. Otherwise, though, when WCW died, he dropped out of the wrestling business. I think he went and maybe started his own business. I know there was some kind of a falling out between Booker and Stevie. I don't know what. That's between the two of them. But they have since put that behind them. Booker went on to have a very nice run for himself in WWE. And Harlem Heat was a big enough team. I mean, Harlem Heat was successful enough in WCW that I have no issue with them going into the Hall of Fame. What I have an issue with are non-WWE teams going in before teams like Demolition get in, who are not getting any younger. But that's not Harlem Heat's fault. But I was trying to think, you know, is there like a top five or a top three of Harlem Heat matches that I would want to highlight and tell people, these are the matches you got to go back and watch? Honestly, I can't say that there are. I can't say there's any specific Harlem Heat match that stands out to me. I remember some of the matches they had with the Steiner Brothers. I remember one or two matches they had, the big matches they had with the Outsiders. There was one WCW pay-per-view. It had to be Fall Brawl because there were the two rings for War Games. But there was a pay-per-view. They had Sherry. I remember in the middle of the match, Sherry and Colonel Parker are in one ring kissing, like swap and spit. And in the other ring, while this match is going on, the Nasty Boys interfere, and they help Harlem Heat win the tag team titles from Dick Slater and Bunkhouse Buck. And I remember that match sucked. And I don't think that was Harlem Heat's fault. Boy, did that match suck. So I remember that. That's, I guess, a terrible example to give here. But they also have the distinction, Harlem Heat does, of having probably, I would say, the most anticlimactic title win that I have ever seen, or certainly one of them. It was on Nitro in 1996. It was Harlem Heat, the Steiner Brothers, and Sting and Lex Luger. And I want to say Sting and Luger were the champions at the time. Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, they were doing their deal. This was early in the NWO days where they were still coming out of the crowd and they would have weapons sometimes. They come out of the crowd with aluminum baseball bats. And as soon as the wrestlers in the ring see this, most of them, they immediately sort of band together and they're turning their attention to Hall and Nash. All of the fans are standing up. What are they looking at? They're looking at Hall and Nash. They're not looking at this tag team title match that's going on in the middle of the ring here. So the ring now fills up even with security. Match is not over. The bell has not rung. There's wrestlers in the ring. There's security in the ring. But in the corner of the screen, you can see Booker rolling up Lex Luger. He schoolboys him because the match is still in progress. And he pins him. And he wins the tag team titles. There's not any reaction to this because nobody is watching this. Nobody is paying attention. Even Tony Schiavone is like, wait, is that it? I think we have new tag team champions. It was such an afterthought. I mean, everything back during that period, the one, I guess, negative, for all the positives you could say about the NWO and, oh, this was so much fun and it helped WCW win the war for 83 weeks. The problem is that everything back then was an afterthought to the NWO stuff. You'd have NWO guys just randomly interfering in matches. You'd have a match going on and the NWO guys would come over to the announce set and the focus would be on them bullying the announcers. You know, this was commonplace. But, of course, that went on for far too long. And it's one thing to kind of, you know, when it first starts happening, it's kind of unique and it feels like everything's out of control and it's kind of fun. It feels very chaotic. But when it goes on for so long, it starts to have a negative impact on the product. And this, I'll never forget that. It was such an afterthought. And these guys just won the tag team titles and then they just left. And it's like it didn't even matter. But as a team, these two had a lot of success. Without that success, I don't know that we get Booker T as the World Heavyweight Champion. You know, that team was a launching pad for his career as a single star. It's what got him noticed. And the only other thing to say is, might I suggest Hulk Hogan as the one to induct them? That way, when they walk out on stage, he could say, Booker, I heard you guys were coming for me. Can't talk about a Harlem Heat induction without acknowledging that promo. I mean, come on now. On Raw, The Shield said goodbye. This was coming off their win at the pay-per-view. They opened the show on Monday night, the three of them together in the ring, possibly for the final time. They really wanted you to know and to think that this was the last time you were going to see The Shield together like this in the ring. Roman Reigns did most of the talking. Then they fisted each other. Reigns and Ambrose left. Dean never said one word. Ambrose never spoke. They left Seth Rollins in the ring to talk about his WrestleMania match with Brock Lesnar. For what it's worth, Braun Strowman is now being advertised as an honorary Shield member, teaming up with Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins on the European tour in May. May, of course, being the month after Dean's contract is said to expire. So, make of that what you will. Paul Heyman showed up after some back and forth between them. Shelton Benjamin showed up. It's like, oh shit, they gave me the Raw crew itinerary by accident, he probably thought. But he made the most of it. He gave Seth Rollins a bunch of German suplexes. This led to a match. We were reminded that it was Shelton Benjamin who helped train Brock Lesnar at the University of Minnesota and who teamed with Brock Lesnar to become tag team champions down in Ohio Valley Wrestling when they were first starting out. So there's a history there. He's been collecting dust on the SmackDown roster for a while now. So for 1 week, they decided to dust off Shelton, brand split be damned. Can we just stop pretending that there even is a real brand split anymore? I mean, most of the guys kind of keep to their corners, but there's no rules anymore. They just do whatever the hell they want. We all knew this would happen. And it's probably just a matter of time before they just blow the whole damn thing up. But can we just pretend, like, stop pretending there's actually a brand split anymore? Do people still kind of believe strongly in there being a brand split? Because there really isn't. Rollins wins. I thought this was doubly good for two reasons. Number one, they actually did something with Shelton Benjamin when I forgot he was even there. And number two, we got Paul Heyman back on commentary for this match here for one night. Forgot how much I miss Heyman on commentary. Bobby Lashley, he regained the Intercontinental title from Finn Balor after a shitty distraction finish by Leo Rush, who came out of the crowd. He started ringing the bell just as Balor was setting up for the double foot stomp. That led to the finish, so Leo is back with Lashley in his good graces, and Balor's reign ends at a cool 3 weeks. Now, there is advertising that is out for WrestleMania that has the Demon Balor, in the advertisement. And I will laugh if we get the Demon for a WrestleMania match with Bobby Lashley for the Intercontinental title, but not for the Universal title match with Brock Lesnar. And look, I get why. I'm not saying it doesn't make any sense. It's still funny to me if that's how this plays out. But look, it does make sense. I'll defend WWE. If that's what ends up happening, I will defend them. Because they probably wanted to just save the Demon for WrestleMania. They did not want to beat the Demon. And the Demon character should probably be saved for those occasions where he feels he has no choice but to dig down deep and bring it out. Like here, where there's a second person that he has to contend with other than his opponent. He's got to deal with this little shit on the outside, this little annoying pipsqueak who screwed him out of the championship. He's been screwed, right? So it kind of makes sense that in situations like that, we would see the Demon. So I think he only dropped the title here to set up a championship win to get the belt back at WrestleMania. That's why I think this was done. Ronda Rousey, she cut a spirited promo, called all of us bandwagon bitches. That's nice. Dana Brooke then showed up for her execution, said that she's got nothing left to lose. Yeah, well, except her life. She says she's got nothing left to lose. And she pointed out that it was the night after a pay-per-view, and Ronda Rousey once said that she wanted to defend her title the night after every pay-per-view, and so here we are. And Ronda promptly pummeled her, not an official match, and no armbar. As Ronda yelled into the camera, "We need to pay $60 to get an armbar." If you're still paying $60 for WWE pay-per-views, you deserve to get an armbar. What the hell is wrong with you? But Killer Ronda is the Ronda that I think we should have gotten a long time ago. I enjoyed this. Dana Brooke will get her title match with Ronda tomorrow night on Raw. You know, if Ronda wasn't undefeated, I would say that we were in for a match like the one that The Rock had with Hurricane Helms from 2003. This was in the lead-up to WrestleMania 19. Rock and Austin was the big match. This was Hollywood Rock. He wrestled Hurricane on Raw, was kind of playing with him, and Stone Cold provided the distraction, and Hurricane got the shock win over The Rock. They could do the same thing here with, you know, Becky coming out for the distraction, and you know, Dana gets the fluke win, but it's not going to happen. I'm just saying that were Ronda not unbeaten and were this not a championship match, I might think that that's what they would do. But the title is on the line and the title is not changing hands. And so what I think will probably end up happening is I think we'll see Ronda just toying with this poor woman until Becky runs in for the DQ. Ronda, by the way, was fined an undisclosed amount of money per WWE for, quote, unprofessional conduct. Hey, you know about that fine they levied against Ronda Rousey? Fake. Not real. Fake. Fake, fake. Very fake. Just want you to know it's fake. Alexa Bliss, she announced herself as the host of WrestleMania. I don't know what's going on with this woman. I don't know if she's still hurt and they're keeping it quiet or if they just don't have anything for her to do. But this is probably better for her than just being stuck in a battle royal. It's not a bad spot for her to be in. I'm guessing, because she was in the Royal Rumble, she wrestled a little bit there. I didn't hear about any kind of new injury or an aggravation of an existing injury. My guess is she wasn't factored into the WrestleMania plans. She's got a great personality. She's great in those kind of talking segments. So I think it's just a case of, you know what, we don't really have anything for you. It's like when Shawn Michaels, when he took time off and came back in, what was 94, I guess it would have been. They gave him the Heartbreak Hotel. He wasn't hurt. But it was Diesel. The focus was on Diesel. It wasn't on Shawn. Shawn was taking a break. They didn't have anything for him. And he'd wrestle from time to time. But for months, he was basically a talk show host. You know, sometimes they just, when they don't have anything for you, you got to find a different role on the show. I assume that's what's going on here. Although this ends her 2-year streak of walking into WrestleMania as a champion. She lost the SmackDown Women's title to Naomi at WrestleMania 33, and last year she lost the Raw Women's title to Nia Jax. Nothing, I don't think, as far as like WrestleMania hosts go, nothing will top Hulk Hogan as the host, welcoming us to the Silver Dome, then having Stone Cold rib him about it when he came out and said, "It's good to be back here in the Silver Dome." Stone Cold doesn't give a fuck. Like, Stone Cold, when he came out to induct Bret Hart into the Hall of Fame in 06, and Hogan is sitting behind him, because I think Hogan had inducted, who did Hogan induct? Might have been Mean Gene, maybe. But he's on stage, out comes Austin, and Austin was still pissed about what happened months earlier when Rock came back to USA for the Raw Homecoming Show in 05. That was the night that Austin stunned all the members of the McMahon family, that horrible stunner to Linda McMahon, and I think he left. Well, later that night, Hogan came out for a promo with Mean Gene, and they were running low on time. He was literally out there for maybe 90 seconds. And he all but challenged Steve Austin to a match at WrestleMania. He basically said to the fans, "I wonder what would happen if, you know, the Hulkster got in the ring with Stone Cold." Okay, we all know what he was inferring. Crowd went crazy. Anybody watching that would be led to believe that there was a match planned. And that was news to Austin. Nobody told him about that. I remember hearing he was pretty PO'd about that. So out he comes a few months later at the Hall of Fame, and he has that great burn, that great dig at Hogan, mentioning that he had like a can of whoop-ass in the back, and it had Hulk Hogan's name on it. And I'll never forget the look on Hogan's face. the camera got like a close up. He did not look amused. So it's like every opportunity Austin gets, yeah, he talks about, oh, I respect you, Hulk, and I like Hulk Hogan. You know what? He never misses a chance to take those little shots. And I know it was all playful and everything, but it's just great. So I don't think anything's going to top that. I don't know that, you know, if she'll be all over the show, if she's just going to kind of open the show and introduce us to the festivities. I guess we'll see. Triple H, he came out to call out Batista. Out comes Dave. Dave, I walk alone, Batista. I walk alone, and the man walks out with an army of security guards. Triple H referred to the security guards as the guardians of the independent scene, which was the best part of this entire segment. Now, how many of those guardians will end up working for him one day in NXT? Batista then ranted over and over about how he wanted Hunter to give him what he wants. Give me what I want! He screamed no less than three dozen times. Give me what I want. Give me what I want. You know what I want? Give it to me. Give me what I want. He sounded like something out of an episode of Special Victims Unit before the guy assaults the girl in the club who doesn't want to dance with him. He sounded like a creep. No means no, Dave. No means no. He said he quit the company to get away from Triple H, that he always holds him down, never pays any attention, always minimizes me. And now I want you to give me what I want, which is a match at WrestleMania. I wasn't in love with this promo the way that a lot of you seem to be, or the way that Dave was with that poor microphone, slobbering all over that thing. Repeating and shouting the same line over and over does not make this his finest work on the microphone. I guess, look, he got the point across. He was passionate. They set the match up. I was expecting, I don't know what I was expecting. I was expecting more out of this. So I was left disappointed. Triple H finally gave him his match. He said it would be no holds barred. Batista said, finally, I get my last match. I get to go out in my last match on my terms and to give you your last match on my terms. I do love heel Batista, so hopefully there's more than just this one segment between these two heading into WrestleMania. Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle waited until tonight in his hometown of Pittsburgh to make the announcement that he will be wrestling his farewell match at WrestleMania this year. He said nothing about his potential opponent. He will apparently tell us, supposedly, we'll see, who his opponent is going to be tomorrow night. And then he wrestled his final match ever in Pittsburgh. He beat Apollo Crews with an Angle Slam. That must have been cool for Apollo to be part of one of Kurt Angle's final matches, his last match ever in his hometown. You know, it's sad to see injuries and father time catch up with Kurt, because Kurt Angle is absolutely, I don't care what anybody says, Kurt Angle is one of the best of all time in the ring. I mean, think about what you look for in a professional wrestler. Ideally, you want them to be able to wrestle. I think that's kind of important. That might not be as important to some people. I still think that's kind of important. You want to look competent in the ring. You want to be able to do things in the ring that other people can't do. You want to be able to be in the ring for 15, 20, 30 minutes at a time and not bore people to death. I don't ever remember being bored by a Kurt Angle match. I was fearful for his life sometimes, some of the things that he did, especially even in TNA. He was still doing moonsaults off steel cages, the crazy man that he is. So the wrestling thing came easy to him, right? We never had to worry about that, given his background. But his background gave him legitimacy that very few other people had. He was a gold medal winner in the Olympic Games. Now, he incorporated that into his gimmick, because there was never a gold medal winner in WWE before he came along, in wrestling anyway. So it just added to his credibility. But on top of that, he can play any role you want him to play. So when you think of pro wrestling, it's not just wrestling. You have to have a personality, you have to have charisma, you have to be able to speak. And he could do it all. He checked all of those boxes. You wanted serious Kurt Angle? Go watch Kurt Angle in 2003. Or 2006. When they sent him to ECW and he had the mouthpiece, he looked like the biggest badass in the world. You want him to be funny? He could do that too. One of the most entertaining characters in the history of this company was that goofy Kurt Angle that we saw back in 2000 when he first debuted. And what a year he had in 2000. One of the best rookie years in WWE history. They gave him the European title. They gave him the Intercontinental title. He won the King of the Ring. He won the WWF title. He wrestled all the top guys. That's a hell of a first year. Him and Brock both. Two best first years in company history. So he could be the straight man. He could be the funny man. And I look at this guy's body of work, and I'm not going to sit here and say A number one. I'd have to think long and hard about that. But he's in the conversation. He has to be. He didn't have the longevity of a Ric Flair. He didn't have the longevity of a Hulk Hogan. But neither did Steve Austin. Neither did The Rock. When you really look at their careers, especially when they were at their peak, they didn't wrestle for that long. They didn't have a long stretch at the very top. It was actually, especially in Austin's case, it was actually very short. You know, he had all those years in WCW, his Stunning Steve and the Hollywood Blonde stuff, but I'm talking at his peak as a single star. You want to chart it, let's say, from the end of 96, when he engaged in that feud with Bret Hart, straight through until he had to retire. It's not really that long, and there was a big gap in the middle because of the neck injury and some other injuries. But I don't know anybody who wouldn't put Stone Cold Steve Austin at or near the top of their list of top stars in company history. Kurt Angle has to be in that conversation. Not everybody can just switch on a dime like that, like the flip of a switch from serious to funny and funny back to serious the way that Kurt Angle could do. He was very versatile in that way. I've said that about Kane. Kane is another one. Kane was not the kind of wrestler that Kurt Angle was, but as a character, Kane is one of the all-time great characters in WWF history. That especially those early years with the original mask and, you know, the whole package. But Kane could do the serious monster stuff, or he could be, you know, he could be the funny guy. He was in the ring doing spinaroonies at one point, talking about Canaanites. You know, whatever you need the guy to do. And then later on, he was wearing a suit and tie, Libertarian Kane. There's been so many versions of Kane over the years. Why do you think they kept him around for so long and he was always on television, even when you didn't want him to be? He could fill any kind of hole, any kind of role they needed him to play. Other people went down. He didn't get hurt that often. Kurt got hurt a lot. Kane, I never heard about Kane being hurt that often. So you could always plug him in when you needed him. Oh, we need you to do this. Okay, fine. Let's have Kane do this. Let's have Kane do that. Kurt was the same way. Whatever you needed him to do. He wasn't a one-dimensional guy. Now, he's a shell of what he used to be. But I am looking forward more to his WrestleMania match than I think most. I'm looking forward to the Kofi stuff. I'm looking forward still, kind of, to the women's stuff. They've kind of botched that a little bit. But the Kurt Angle match, not that I expect a five-star classic here, but I'm looking forward to this. It's going to be, I think, a pretty emotional thing when the match is over, whether he wins or loses, and everybody stands up and gives him the big ovation, and everybody gives him the big send-off. And I do believe, I mean, I know it's wrestling, right? We all thought Shawn Michaels was retired, and then he came back in Saudi Arabia, so never say never. But, you know, I think that this probably is it for Kurt. I think he probably realizes that his body just can't go anymore, and this is it. So it's going to be a pretty emotional thing. The question is, who does he wrestle in his final match? As much as I would still like to see John Cena against Samoa Joe, it is the match that they seem to kind of be teasing a couple of weeks ago, and I've said I would love it for it to be Joe and Cena and play off the history. They came up together out on the West Coast. This thing is screaming out for a television program or like a big WrestleMania match where they can maybe even get some of that early footage and put it in the video. Like, it just screams out for that. As much as I would like to see that match at WrestleMania, John Cena as Kurt Angle's final opponent when Kurt was seen as very first opponent on television would be a fitting end. I think the most fitting end to Kurt's career. And I think it would be a nice full circle story for John Cena. And as Jacob pointed out to me in an email, I didn't realize this, but Jacob emailed me. He said, Raw tomorrow night is in Chicago. It's at the Allstate Arena. That happens to be the very same building where John Cena made his debut on SmackDown in 2002 when he challenged Kurt Angle to a match. So it would be fitting for Cena to show up on TV tomorrow night and either challenge Kurt not even challenge him, just say, Kurt, it would be an honor, you know, for me to be your final opponent, or maybe turn the tables and have Kurt interrupt Cena and say, I choose you. Just like Ric Flair chose Shawn Michaels in that storyline, right? He wanted Shawn to be his final opponent. Maybe they do something similar where Kurt says, John, I want you to be my final opponent. I want you to be the last person that I wrestle. It would be an honor. It's too good of a story to pass up. And I know, and I already had people online saying, well, that's stupid. It doesn't benefit anybody. Why wouldn't you put a young guy? Why wouldn't you put a new face in there? They could get the rub. You know how many times we hear this? And in a lot of situations, in most situations, I probably would agree that if you can take somebody with a name like a Kurt Angle and use them in a way to get somebody else over, that's always ideal. And you could certainly find one if you want to. You could look for a newer guy and, you know, Kurt can put them over and all that, unless it's a babyface, you know, and then they win, then I really don't see the point. They could do Baron Corbin and they could have the battle of the former GMs. He has history with Angle. It would be somebody Kurt could beat. So he wins in his retirement match. But I really don't want to see Baron Corbin as Kurt Angle's final opponent. That's like a really good television show that used to be great. Still pretty good, but it's not as good as it used to be. All of a sudden gets canceled mid-season before the writers have a chance to give it the ending that it deserves. I don't want to see Baron Corbin as Kurt Angle's final opponent. Drew McIntyre, he looks to be accounted for now for WrestleMania. It probably is going to be Drew and Roman Reigns. And he already has a win over Kurt. Unless they wanted to come back to that and you know, mention the fact that not only did Drew beat Kurt Angle on TV months ago, but he embarrassed him. It was an embarrassing loss. It was a one-sided, lopsided, embarrassing loss. And the story then could be that Kurt is looking for redemption and has either just a better showing but still falls short, or maybe finds a way to win. You know, maybe Roman Reigns doesn't even wrestle. Maybe Roman interferes and he costs Drew the match and that's how Kurt wins. I think that would suck. I don't want to see that. First of all, I'm sure Roman Reigns is going to be doing more than just, you know, doing a run-in. And I don't need to see somebody interfering to give Kurt a cheap win. That's not how I would do it. So I think Drew is out of the picture. I think he's accounted for. I think that he's got his thing with the Shield. And also, let's be honest here. Kurt Angle, if it was a straight-up match at this stage, beating Drew McIntyre as dominant as they made him look last week, would be ridiculous. I think you go in this case with another vet. I'm not buying into the whole, you gotta go with a young guy, give the rub. There's not much of a rub left to give in Kurt's current state. This is not the Kurt Angle of old. How impressive is it really if somebody beats Kurt Angle? Everybody else has already done it. He's had a bunch of losses on TV. I think he even lost to Baron Corbin on TV. So I'm not even sure how much of a, quote, rub there is for anybody at this point. Chad Gable against Kurt Angle is a match that I would have killed to see. You guys know I'm a big proponent of Chad Gable. Would I love to see Kurt Angle against Chad Gable? Of course I would. I'd love to see the Kurt Angle of old against Chad Gable more than the current one. But I think it would be even cool to see the current Kurt Angle against Chad Gable. But that ship has sailed. We're now going into Kurt's final match. Time ran out. To take Chad Gable out of a tag team. He's doing the tag team thing now with Bobby Roode. He has nothing to do with Kurt Angle. He has no connection to Kurt Angle. Had they gone with him in that stupid storyline, then they would have probably a great WrestleMania match on the table. And Jason Jordan, it sounds like his career may be over. Even if he comes back, he's not going to be back in time for WrestleMania, so he's not an option. I don't want Chad Gable just shoehorned in there because, oh, I think it would be a great match. It has to make sense. This is Kurt's final match. This is not time to just, you know, pop the names in a randomizer and pick the one young guy's name who comes out. I don't want to see that. This is not the time to worry about young guys and giving them a boost and giving them a rub. I want an opponent that is fitting, that makes sense for Kurt Angle's final match. There's only one name for that, and that name is John Cena. I would make the call more than Cena Joe to go with Cena against Kurt. And if Kurt's body wasn't beaten to shit, I would say Brock Lesnar, so that we get one more Angle-Lesnar match. But that ship also sailed a very long time ago. I think Brock is probably the worst opponent that Kurt Angle could have at this stage. It should be John Cena. They had Braun Strowman destroy a red Chevy Camaro gifted to him by Colin Jost of SNL, who he fake assaulted the week before. Remember, this is all fake. Wrestling is fake. It's not real. They're playing a part. WWE wants to make very clear that you understand this is all fake. Even that car that Braun took apart, not a real car. It was made out of papier-mâché. Only later, when this was over, did somebody email me, and then I saw it was circulating everywhere, but somebody emailed me a photo of this new Mattel toy set of Braun Strowman dismantling a red car that looked an awful lot like the one that they used and he took apart on television this week. That entire segment was literally just one big advertisement for their toys. And, you know, last year at WrestleMania, Braun Strowman teamed with a 10-year-old boy. Now he's going to be working an angle at WrestleMania with a 10-year-old looking boy from Saturday Night Live. Remember those reports before the Royal Rumble that claimed that the reason that WWE did the bait and switch on the Lesnar-Strowman match was to protect Braun Strowman so that he didn't have to lose to Brock Lesnar? Pepperidge Farm remembers. Roman Reigns against Sasha Baron Corbin never happened, thank God, because Drew McIntyre attacked Roman Reigns. This was to be Roman's first singles match back in 5 months. He was attacked by Drew. He gave him two Claymore kicks, including one into the ring post that may have concussed him. They were certainly teasing that he may have been concussed, or he had his lights knocked out. He was knocked loopy. Seth Rollins ran down to check on him, make sure he was okay. He helped kind of walk him to the back. Roman looked all woozy. Backstage, Dean Ambrose was not happy about this. He found Triple H, and he demanded that he get a Falls Count Anywhere match with Drew McIntyre. And that turned out to be the main event. Now, I do love me a good Falls Count Anywhere match. They don't go outside anymore, which kind of bothers me. That was one of the things I loved about, and I miss, about the Attitude Era. There's a lot of things I don't miss, and there's a lot of things that I do miss. And one of the things I miss are those hardcore title matches where they would venture behind the scenes and they would venture out of the building. They would brawl out into the snow. They would go across. Literally, the camera would follow them across the street into oncoming traffic, into a bar across the street. They did that 1 year at SummerSlam. I think it was with Boss Man and Al Snow. Was it Boss Man? I think it was Boss Man and Al Snow. And of course, that one time it was Al Snow and Bob Holly. They wrestled into the Mississippi River. You know, it was 19 years ago yesterday. Yesterday was 3/16. So, of course, it was Stone Cold's day. But it was 19 years ago yesterday on SmackDown that the Headbangers chased after Crash Holly at Funtime USA in Brooklyn. Probably the most fun of all of the hardcore title segments they ever did. I don't even know how many games I played at Funtime back in the day. They had arcade games up on the second level, skee ball, the strength hammer, the bumper cars, and the super slide. The super slide that Crash rode down, I used to ride down that same slide. It was so much fun. I met Shawn Michaels for the second time I met him there. That was when he had the IC title, so that had to be in the summer of 95, I guess. Summer or fall of 95. Sid came when he was the champion. He had the Winged Eagle belt with him. I met him there. You know, they did autograph signings. Now it's a public storage building. Even the bowling alley. They had a bowling alley across the street. The bowling alley is gone. It used to be Rainbow Lanes. That's gone too. No more Fun Time. Fun times are over. Drew lawn darted Dean Ambrose, though, twice into the LED boards. Then he trapped his head inside the railing that leads from the stage down to the floor. And he gave him a Claymore kick that displaced the entire railing. And then he pinned him for the win. This was a dominant display. He even gave Ambrose another Claymore kick in the closing moments of the show. There is no way to make the man look stronger than they did here on this show. Took out two of the biggest stars on the Raw brand. The show faded to black with him standing tall. He destroyed both Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose, and my guess is that it's going to be McIntyre and Reigns in Roman's first singles match back at WrestleMania, unless it turns into some kind of a, you know, I guess they could do a tag team match if they need something for Corbin to do. Because Lashley, I have to assume, is accounted for with the Intercontinental title if he defends, let's say, against Balor the Demon. And if they want Corbin on the show, I certainly don't want him against Kurt Angle. They could do, as a way to get Ambrose on the show for what may be his final WrestleMania, Roman and Dean against Corbin and McIntyre. I probably would prefer that it be a singles match with Reigns and McIntyre, but again, to get those guys on the show, you could certainly do that. And hey, you could still have Ambrose turn again. You could have Ambrose turn on Roman for whatever his reasonings are. And if he's got a month left on his contract and they want to take full advantage of it, whatever that pay-per-view is in April, what is that? Is that Extreme Rules or Backlash? I don't even know. I think it's Backlash. Whatever the pay-per-view is in April, you know, the big send-off for Dean Ambrose could be a singles match against Roman Reigns. That's what they did with Diesel. They knew Diesel was leaving to go to WCW. They knew in February. They knew in February, early March, they knew he was leaving. He wrestled The Undertaker, WrestleMania, he lost. Did they take him off TV? Of course not. He headlined that In Your House show in April. It was him against Shawn Michaels. Why not use Ambrose if he's still under contract? Get a match out of him. Singles match against Roman Reigns. Just saying. I'm just saying, there could still be a turn in the works for Dean Ambrose. This guy is getting his ass kicked every single week for his friend. The only reason he even asked for the match was to stand up in defense of his friend. Where was his friend at the end of the show? Where was Rollins? Rollins was off tending to Roman. He didn't come out to save Ambrose. He came out to check on Roman, but he didn't come out to check on Dean. I just feel like this is still going somewhere. But with McIntyre, this is a perfect example of how you book someone strong. And then there's an example of how not to book somebody strong. EC3 lost to Tyler Breeze in what was maybe a three or four minute match on Main Event. I tweeted that sounds like something you would put on the tombstone of your career. And boy, did I hear from a lot of angry Tyler Breeze fans. What disrespect. Tyler's a good talent. Are you people slow? Have you not listened to my show for the last 5 years? I used to be the biggest Tyler Breeze fan in the world. I'm still a fan. I loved it when he came back last year to Full Sail and wrestled Ricochet. He felt like a star again when he came out. You know how long it's been since Tyler Breeze felt like a star? In one night, he walks back into Full Sail, and it's like time never even passed by. I was hoping he would wrestle more in NXT. I'm sure he did too. We know that Ty Dillinger, before he left, he asked to go back to NXT. Please send me back, please. And they said no. So he left. So don't get on my case about them disrespecting Tyler Breeze. I wasn't commenting on his talent. Tyler Breeze is at the bottom of the ladder in WWE. He's the first rung that you step on when you go to get onto the ladder. That's where he's been almost from the moment he debuted on the main roster. Losing to Tyler Breeze would be considered a death knell for anybody on that roster. It's like losing to Skip of the Body Donnas back in the mid-90s. Chris Candido was a hell of a talent. But in WWE, he was a glorified job guy. If my truth offends you, stick fucking cotton balls in your ears. Don't twist my words and don't get on my ass. This is not an indictment of Tyler Breeze. It's an indictment of Vince McMahon. I am the grand jury. I've heard all the evidence. I cast my vote to indict. It's too bad we'll never get a conviction. So these crimes are going to continue to occur with more talent from NXT. I find myself agreeing with Dixie Carter, of all people. They got me to agree with Dixie. Somebody on Twitter said to her, "Save your nephew." Her response was, "Don't get me started." The man never had a chance. "Oh, he's just a jacked up physique. He's not even that good of a wrestler." First of all, you probably didn't see some of the later work of his, or the match with Rockstar Spud, and even some of the other matches he had with Kurt and people in TNA. He's not a bad wrestler. Yeah, he's not. He's not Kurt Angle. He's not Seth Rollins or somebody like that flying all over the place. But You signed him to a contract. You paid him to work for you. You spend weeks promoting his call-up on television to do what with him? Stand him in front of a mirror with a spray bottle like somebody who had his tongue ripped out of his mouth? At least now he's finally speaking words. They never should have called him up in the first place if they had no plans for him. I haven't seen a career fade this fast since Jussie Smollett. SmackDown was live from the Nutter Center in Dayton, Ohio. Whenever I hear the Nutter Center, first thing I do is laugh. I can't help it. But the second thing I do is I remember the 1993 King of the Ring, which was held there. It looks like a small building. You can actually see the back wall. It looks like a giant gymnasium. But it has a certain charm to it that I've always liked. I always liked the look of that pay-per-view. This did not look all that different than the normal Monday Night Raw, because all of these shows apparently have to look the same. But I do like that building. Twitter poll, over 2,600 votes, 83% thumbs up, 17% thumbs down. Vastly different score from the one that you gave Monday Night Raw this week. That seems to be the pattern when it comes to SmackDown versus Raw. Shane McMahon came out, fresh off his heel turn and attack on The Miz at Fastlane. Ah, God damn it. Shit. The WWE Fastlane. God, that hurts. Ugh. He came out here and called himself the best in the world because he was born that way. Someone has Lady Gaga on his iPod. He said he's tired of being used by others to get ahead, and from now on he's doing things for himself. And then he said that he would be facing The Miz at WrestleMania. Miz should have been the one to challenge Shane to a match at WrestleMania after what he did to him. This is some backwards logic here, to have Shane be the one to want the match, but either way, we knew where this was headed. Miz is coming to SmackDown this Tuesday to deliver his own address to Shane, his first big babyface promo since the attack. We'll see how he does. I'm still not sold on him in that role. But this is one of those low-key stories. People were not clamoring, they were not begging for Miz against Shane McMahon at WrestleMania, but it's one of these low-key stories that they've been building now for months, and I know it is pretty low on people's lists as far as WrestleMania matches to look forward to, but I appreciate the time that they have taken with this story. I think it's progressed nicely, and I think it'll make for a nice mid-card match on the show this year. Aleister Black, Ricochet, the Hardy Boys took on Sheamus, Cesaro, Rusev, and Shinsuke Nakamura. Went to a no contest after the New Day cleaned house. They ran in and cleaned house, and the Usos cut a real good promo backstage. It seemed like they may have been singling out the Hardys to me here, which would be a fine match for WrestleMania. I think first time ever the Hardys against the Usos, but it could also end up being a multi-team match. They did mention the other teams as well. There was a giant brawl here. And to get everybody on the show, I could see them putting some sort of tag team turmoil type match together. I personally would rather it be just the Hardys and the Usos. It's a match I don't think has happened before. Have they wrestled before? Maybe like a random TV match? I don't think so. I don't think they have. They are two of the best teams in company history. You know, the Usos have made their case. Some of the matches they've had, all the tag team titles they've held, they've been around for a while now. The Hardys, I mean, look, the Hardys have their place in history. So two of the biggest named tag teams really in the history of the company. Matt, you know, is in the best shape that he's been in a very long time. They said on TV that he dropped 15 pounds. He's moving around a lot better. The Usos, for all of their years in the company, you know, we could talk about how Kofi Kingston, for example, has never had a one-on-one match at WrestleMania in his 11 years in the company. And that may not happen this year either if his match with Daniel Bryan ends up being a triple threat or a fatal four-way with you know, Kevin Owens and Mustafa Ali. But that's one hell of a record. Well, with the Usos, last year was the first time that both Usos together even had a match on the main card at WrestleMania. I think they're due for a big WrestleMania match and a big win, and I'd like to see it come against the Hardys 2-on-2. Whether they win or not, that could also depend on their contract status. Last I read, you know, WWE was trying to get them to sign new deals. I never heard that they did or it wasn't reported if they did. And so that could very well, if their deals are up next month, which was the belief, that could factor into things as well as far as whether they win or drop the belts at WrestleMania. Randy Orton came to the ring for a promo. Sometimes those are some scary words. Because you never know exactly what you're going to get with Randy Orton. It could be some uninspired scripted dialogue that he reads out loud and sounds about as exciting as a kidney stone. Or, on occasion, they'll actually give him some good stuff to work with. This was one of those times. They gave him something good to work with. Why is it that the house that AJ Styles built is SmackDown? When I made my debut on SmackDown, he said, in 2002. When I made my debut, AJ Styles was wrestling in bingo halls for $10 a night. In 2005, when Orton was wrestling The Undertaker at WrestleMania, AJ Styles, he said, was getting a tan in Florida with Dixie Carter. It took 1 week for us to get a Dixie Carter mention on TV since Jeff Jarrett joined the creative team. It was faster than I thought. 1 week. In 2006, 2007, 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15, Orton said, I was a champion. This is not the house that AJ Styles built. This is the house that Randy Orton built. There's a lot of fire here from Orton in this promo. He actually had a pulse. AJ came out and said, you know, for somebody who hates the indies, you sure did follow my career pretty closely. He said, I'm proud to have come from the indies, and guys like you were not built for my world. You would not have made it in my world. He called the RKO a knockoff diamond cutter. Orton took exception to that and said, wait a minute. You mean to tell me that you and your little indie friends never ripped anybody off? And he threw up the too sweet gesture that the Young Bucks ripped off from the Click in the NWO. AJ said, look around backstage. You're surrounded by all of these indie pals of mine. Which is true. It is a very indie-rific roster that they have. He said, they earned the right to be in WWE. They didn't get here because of their daddy's name. And then he mentioned Evolution. He mentioned Legacy, Rated RKO, the Wyatt family, all these groups that Orton sort of latched onto. Said, it sounds to me like you had a lot of babysitters. Norton says, as long as you want to rent a room in my house, I'm the landlord, and rent's due, you son of a bitch. AJ says, if you want your rent, and then he points at the WrestleMania sign, and that was the end of the segment. I love this segment. I thought this was great. And it totally sold me on their match at WrestleMania, the opposite of what Batista and Triple H did on Raw. Like I said, screaming the same thing 15 times does not get me interested or any more excited to see your match. But here, all the little references to things in the past and their career and their ascent on the way up and, you know, how their careers really went on two totally different paths. And I'm very eager now to see what kind of video they put together for this match at WrestleMania. Obviously, they have all of the footage of Randy Orton's career from probably going back to his OVW days. To his debut on SmackDown in 02 and everything that AJ referenced. But the question is, are they going to license any of the footage from Impact or Ring of Honor, which they've done before? You know, they've done documentaries on the network, they've done DVD documentaries, and they've had access to footage from Ring of Honor. They've had access to footage from Impact, and they have their global wrestling network. Usually they just credit them at the end or they put the little logo in the corner. If they wanted to, they can get footage of AJ, you know, in the Impact Zone with Dixie Carter, and they can get the footage of him wrestling in Ring of Honor and, you know, doing the Code of Honor handshake before his matches early in his career and him wrestling at bingo halls. I've seen some fan-made stuff that looks really good, and I'm hoping that WWE will be able to get all that footage and just put this really kick-ass video together because this is one of the more compelling stories going into WrestleMania. You know, even though this match only really came together in the last few weeks, it's one of the matches that I find myself genuinely interested in seeing now. You know, and I'm not sure, you know, if we're going to get the 450 into the RKO finish. I mean, I'm sure we'll get a spot like that in this match. I don't know that the match will end like that. Although that would be a great way if Orton's going to win, you know, for him to win in a way like that. We'll see some kind of, wicked RKO where, you know, AJ's coming down and he gets caught in it or something. I really am curious what kind of finish these two can put together. I guess a lot of it depends on who's winning and who's going over. But this is the most interested I've been in a Randy Orton match going into WrestleMania, probably since WrestleMania 30. And that was only because I was, you know, I bought into the Daniel Bryan story and Orton was the champion. So, of course, I was interested in seeing his match. Less so for him, more so for Bryan. I'm very much looking forward to this now. And look, I can get behind the idea of Randy Orton, the Indie Killer, as a gimmick. When those reports popped up a month ago, 2 months ago, whatever it was, about him being open, supposedly saying that he's open to offers from All Elite Wrestling, which somehow turned into, hey, Randy Orton's going to AEW. But him being open to offers from AEW, I started thinking, you know, Randy Orton, the Indie Killer, would be a great gimmick for him if he ever did leave. He's the establishment WWE guy. He can play that up. An Indie Killer gimmick for him if he left the company would be money. It would be a license to print money if he ever did. Now, he's not going anywhere, but I'm saying, you know, in fantasy land, if he did, I think that could totally work. Asuka beat Sonya Deville in a short match, much the same way Asuka beat Mandy Rose at Fastlane. Oh, wait, no. Ow, ow. Stop. WWE Fastlane. Son of a bitch. WWE Fastlane. She beat her at WWE Fastlane. Fuck this company. Ah, damn it. That's going to leave a mark now. Here in this match, Mandy accidentally on purpose caused Sonya to trip. She then got kicked and was forced to tap out to the Asuka lock. There was tension between Mandy and Sonya after the match. I think this is leading to a split where Mandy stays heel and Sonya goes babyface. I think they probably see her as kind of the next big breakout babyface star of that women's division on the SmackDown roster anyway. WWE still has not decided on a WrestleMania opponent, supposedly, for Asuka. And we are now 3 weeks away from the show. They may have had something planned with Lacey Evans. I guess when she walked into the production meeting before they could tell her, she turned and sashayed her way out. So that's off the table. My idea still stands. Take it and use it, guys. Have the winner of the Women's Battle Royal, which should be called the Sensational Invitational, in honor of Sherry Martel. Have the winner challenge Asuka for the championship later on the main show that night. Becky Lynch came out. She tossed her crutch away, but still hobbled down to the ring. She says that she got in Ronda Rousey's head. She played her like a fiddle. Charlotte interrupted, tells Becky, you've been hot for 6 months. I've been hot for 4 years. Bow down to the queen. Becky says, we don't need a queen. We need the man. The queen. The man. The Irish last kicker. The extraordinary man who does extraordinary... I'm going to vomit. You know what I liked? I liked it when in the 80s, when they had Saturday night's main event, it was less about nicknames. I mean, guys had nicknames, right? The Million Dollar Man. But not everybody had... I mean, it wasn't to this degree. But you know what they had? They had their own logo. So when they would come out for a match, they would put a graphic, two graphics on the screen, and one would be the logo for one wrestler, and then the other would be the logo for the other. I miss that. Logos I'd be okay with. Why not come up with logos? I mean, they have them on the t-shirts. They never really show them on TV. I don't know, just one of those little things that I miss. But anyway, this was a very basic promo, but it's these types of segments, I would have to think they're only going to get more heated as we get closer to WrestleMania. There'll be, I'm sure, the inevitable contract signing with all three women. And that's going to really sell this match. It's going to be those promos as we get closer and closer to the show. No hokey injury angles. No unnecessary plot twists. That's done. That's finished. That's over with. Now it's time to sell the match with their promos. This was not necessarily one of those promos. But again, I would have to think things are going to get a little more heated as we get closer to the pay-per-view. Rey Mysterio and R-Truth beat Samoa Joe and Andrade Cien Almas when Rey cradled Joe for the win. Joe was incredulous. He could not believe it. probably couldn't believe what Ray was wearing more than losing the match. I couldn't believe it. He was wearing this flesh-colored singlet with a fucking thong drawn onto it. Like black panties. He was wearing black panties, it looked like, over his outfit. I cannot unsee this. Maybe he lost a bet. Maybe it was a rib. He should give Goldust his clothes back and never wear them again. This win here sets up Ray, though, for a U.S. title match with Samoa Joe maybe this Tuesday, maybe next week on TV. They could do it at WrestleMania, you know, but then where does that leave Andrade? If they go with John Cena for Kurt Angle's final match, like I hope they do, I think the U.S. title match probably ends up being a multi-man match at WrestleMania. It's been a multi-man match the last few weeks. Why would WrestleMania be any different? Maybe they throw one or two more people in there. Daniel Bryan and Rowan beat Kevin Owens and Mustafa Ali. Rowan pinned Ali, which led to the arrival of Vince McMahon for the show-closing angle with the New Day. New Day came out. Big E was in serious mode, Big E and Xavier. But Big E said they're in no mood to listen to Vince. We do everything for you. We never complain, and still we get treated like crap. They said Kofi's been here 11 years. He deserves this. Vince disagreed and said nobody deserves anything. He said Kofi will be in the Hall of Fame one day, but not on his own. No, he'll be in as a member of the New Day. So basically like China going in as a member of DX. He said Daniel Bryan made a great point when he called Kofi a B-plus player. I love how 2019 Daniel Bryan is basically wrestling 2014 Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania this year. Big E, I have to say this about Big E. Big E was the real sleeper, I think, here in this segment with his work on the mic. I said last week, I think I made a comment, I'm not really sure, you know, if they did do some kind of a big angle where he turned and maybe even Kofi wins the title, but then New Day sort of feuds. Could he handle it? We still don't know if he could carry like a full heel promo, but certainly on the microphone, when he's serious and he's not gyrating and doing all these weird things, he can carry himself on the microphone. I think he showed that here in this segment. Kofi said, look, I never complain about anything. I always bust my ass. I've missed out on family events. I've never once been trick-or-treating with my kids because I've always been on the road. And everybody said, aw. Vince McMahon said, fuck your feelings. No, he didn't say that. He was thinking it. But he said, look, I don't want any handouts. I just want you to tell me, what do I have to do to get a match with Daniel Bryan for the WWE title? And at that point, Randy Orton walked out on stage. Samoa Joe walked out on stage. The Bar walked out on stage. Rowan came out. Vince said, well, all you got to do is run the gauntlet against all five of these men next week. And if you can beat them, then you're in. The impossible task. And that's how they went off the air. I have to thank Yvonne, and I really like that angle, by the way, but I have to thank Yvonne in the Facebook group for reminding me about a certain story. And I forgot about this, even though I read it, because I read Jericho's book. It's from Chris Jericho's second book. I think it was his second book. The Best in the World at What? I have no idea. Because Jericho, I think, did four books. It's one of the Jericho books that's actually on Audible, because not all of them are. So, cheap plug. This would be a good time to use our link and get the book for free. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster. Since I forgot to plug it earlier, I'll plug it now. But in the book, Jericho tells a story about being on Vince McMahon's private plane a few weeks before WrestleMania 26. They're getting ready to go to a press conference for the show. Kofi Kingston was among those flying on the private jet that day to the press conference. And Jericho said everybody was shit-faced by the time they landed. Well, Jericho, I'm sure, was. Everybody was shit-faced by the time they landed. Probably got an empty bottle of Grey Goose rolling down the aisle. And when Kofi gets up to leave, Vince McMahon makes a comment to him to the effect of, maybe you'll get over one of these days. Jericho was pissed. Kofi no-sold it, got off the plane. Jericho was pissed. And he goes over to Kofi on the runway. He says, look, you got to get back on that plane right now and challenge him. You can't let that slide, because if you do, He'll walk all over you whenever he feels like it. You gotta stand up to him. He wanted Kofi to stand up for himself. So, Kofi marched back up onto the plane. Jericho followed. He wanted to watch. And Kofi says, Vince, do you have a problem with me? And Vince was kind of taken aback by the whole thing. And he said, maybe I do. You want to do something about it? And Kofi goes, do you want me to do something about it? And Vince goes, do you want to do something about it? This sounds like a scene out of an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm. I have this image in my head of Vince staring down Kofi the way that Larry stares down people. So finally, Vince just double-legs him. In mid-sentence, he's saying something, and he double-legs Kofi out of nowhere. The two of them are rolling around the aisle on the plane for a little bit before Vince just gets up, belly laughing. That's how you do it, he says, and then he gets off the plane. I just wanted to tell that story again, but it's the joke that Vince told that got me. Maybe you'll get over one of these days. And here we are, almost 10 years after he said that, and it would appear that Kofi has finally gotten himself over. The people always liked him. It was never like he was never, you know, quote-unquote over, whatever your definition of that word is. The people always liked him, and New Day was very, very popular for a while. I mean, they're still popular. I feel like they've cooled down a little bit. But he is over now at a level that he has never been before in his entire career. Now, can it last beyond WrestleMania? Can it last if and when they give the people the big payoff with him winning the championship? I can't say. I don't know. Maybe they're only in it for the ride, and when the ride is over, they won't care. Maybe people are just so wrapped up in the story that when the story ends, the reactions just aren't going to be there anymore. Or they're going to take a step back and go, wait a minute, Kofi Kingston is the WWE champion. You know, and have a different reaction. There's just no way of knowing. I mean, surely if he loses, if he goes to WrestleMania and loses, if they Booker T him like they did to Booker in 03, then surely he will not be as over. I mean, Booker was okay. Booker ended up being okay and doing well for himself, in part because they moved him the fuck away from Triple H a few years later, and he won the world title on SmackDown. But he had already been a world champion. Booker was already a headline guy, even if he had been sort of pushed down the card a little bit. He had been world champion in WCW. He had been a world heavyweight champion in WWE. He wrestled guys like Stone Cold and The Rock. Kofi Kingston doesn't have that on his resume. Kofi Kingston has never been seen at that level. Booker was able to survive it. I don't know that Kofi survives a loss at WrestleMania. He's never been to the top, so this is a big test for him. The last gauntlet match where Kofi lasted an hour and fell short is really what got the fans behind him so strong in the first place. I expect him to win here in this gauntlet, but win or lose, I think this is going to be fantastic. I think it's smart for them to set up one last big roadblock for him to have to overcome to get to WrestleMania. And it puts the focus of the show on Tuesday this week squarely on Kofi Kingston. That show is now being built around him running the gauntlet. He's now working an angle with Vince McMahon. They wouldn't have just anybody out there working with Vince. That's a good sign. I'm optimistic about this in terms of his chances at WrestleMania. And I'm happy for him. I'm happy that he's getting this opportunity. It's a great story. New Day went from hosting WrestleMania 2 years ago to being involved in a major angle for the WWE Championship. You know, with Vince McMahon heading into WrestleMania, I'd say that's a pretty big step up. And the gauntlet match on Tuesday is going to open the show. So if you're watching live, just be aware of that. It's going to be good. I'd be surprised if we don't see AJ Styles cost Randy Orton the match. Maybe it even comes down to Kofi and Orton. And AJ interferes and helps Kofi win. Which wouldn't be a big deal. I mean, look, if it's just nonstop, constant interference throughout the entire gauntlet, you know, Aleister Black and Ricochet attack the bar, and, you know, Rey Mysterio attacks Samoa Joe, and that, then it's kind of like, eh, okay, kind of a cheap win for Kofi. But if Kofi can hang in there and find a way somehow to beat all these guys, but then he's kind of out of gas, and it looks like Orton's going to beat him, and AJ comes and saves the day, to me, that's fine. If Kofi's just wrestled 40, 50, 60 minutes and has a little assist at the end, not a big deal. I would expect that. But I'm looking forward to it. I'm pulling for him. I think it's going to be a great match. And no, like I said, I'm happy for him. Even though he once told me I look like John Laurinaitis, when I interviewed him, and that mortified me. I forgive him. I'm going to let bygones be bygones. Tom Phillips. Tom Phillips was on Busted Open Radio this week. He said that if Kofi gets the match, yeah, if he gets the match, kayfabe Tom, but if he gets the match against Daniel Bryan, he said he would like to see that match go on last and headline WrestleMania. Now, of course, he's going to say that because he's the SmackDown lead announcer. So he would get to call the main event of WrestleMania if that happened. But I got to be honest with you. You've heard me talk about the women the last few months and how there's no other match that makes sense to headline that show except Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey. Now, of course, they've shoehorned Charlotte in there as well. And that really still, in a lot of ways, is the match getting the most, kind of the heaviest promotion going into WrestleMania. All that being equal, I'm less convinced now. They've muddied this thing up so much. I'm less convinced now that that match ought to go on last if Kofi is getting a WWE title match. I'm going to withhold judgment until we get closer to the show. It also depends on the finish. I mean, if we're being honest here, if Becky is winning and Kofi is not, then you close with the women. If Kofi is winning and Becky is not, then you close with the WWE title. If they're both winning, well, let's see how things play out the next couple of weeks. I'm kind of indifferent to the whole thing at this point. I'm at the point where I don't even care anymore. They could put the fucking Women's Battle Royal on last for all I care. It almost doesn't even matter to me. I'm so exhausted just thinking about this. And I didn't even mention Brock Lesnar and Seth Rollins. I wouldn't put it past them to put Brock on if Rollins is going to slay the beast and this is going to be his big crowning moment. They may put that match on last. That's in the running as well. It goes back to the question, are they going to give us three feel-good moments on this show? Brock losing, Kofi winning, and Becky winning. I would be kind of stunned if we get all three. So it's like I said last week, pick your poison. What's the most important thing that you'd like to see on this WrestleMania show?
Let me remind you, and I think a lot of people here will agree, NXT is way better than the WWE.
Got a bunch of NXT spoilers here concerning the NXT title situation from the tapings on Wednesday night. So if you do not want to know how the NXT title situation is being resolved, who is going to take over to challenge for the championship or anything like that, skip ahead. Skip ahead by, I don't know, but skip ahead. Or just wait, and after NXT airs on Wednesday, you can come back to this part and listen, but I'm going to get into it. It's just too much important information to ignore here. Triple H showed up with Goldie in tow at Full Sail on Wednesday. Goldie, of course, is the name given to the NXT title by Tommaso Ciampa, who is out for the foreseeable future after neck surgery. Triple H admitted to the crowd that he was going to announce Ciampa against Gargano for the title at NXT TakeOver, but now we are going to crown a new champion in New York. He announced that a fatal five-way match would take place that night at the tapings, with the winner challenging Johnny Gargano for the vacant title in a 2-out-of-3 falls match at TakeOver. The five-way had Aleister Black, Ricochet, The Velveteen Dream, Adam Cole, and yes, Matt Riddle, who was my pick. Unfortunately, he did not win. But from what I read, this was an incredible match. I'm very much looking forward to seeing it on TV this week. It airs this Wednesday. It might be a one-match show. And I did not see or read anything about there being a rematch at the tapings with Keith Lee and Dominic Dijakovic, Donovan Dijak, which, again, on TV this past week, they advertised the rematch between them was scheduled for this Wednesday. Unless I missed something, I didn't see that match was taped. And I'm guessing the reason for that is that this Fatal 5-Way may take up the full hour. This might be one of those Lucha Underground shows they would sometimes do, where you had a one-match show. And those were some of the best episodes of Lucha Underground. So I don't know that we're going to get much of anything except maybe some backstage segments. This might be the only match we get on TV this Wednesday. And perhaps then they could just save Lee and Dijak. Well, I was going to say for the TakeOver show, I guess that doesn't work because they've got a full lineup already. But in any event, we've got the Fatal 5-Way is already in the books. Again, skip ahead if you don't want to know who won. But Adam Cole pinned Ricochet. It will be Johnny Gargano against Adam Cole, 2 out of 3 falls, to crown a new NXT champion at the Barclays Center. Question is, what do you do? Do you put the title on Gargano and pay off his chase for the title after all these years? He's never been the champion before. He's chased, he's fallen short, he's been screwed, but he's never won the title. He's never won the big one. So do you give him the belt, or do you put the title on Adam Cole and have Gargano continue to chase for it? Or maybe they just, you know, call him up to the main roster. I mean, all those opportunities that Johnny Gargano had where he came up short, can he afford, if he is staying in NXT, can he afford another loss? Can he afford to fall short one more time? It's the Braun Strowman thing. Now, if they're going to call him up to the main roster, I guess it doesn't matter. But with Ciampa gone, I could see them wanting to keep Gargano down in NXT for a little while longer. I would have Cole with the title and have Johnny chase after it. If I had to make the call here, who goes over? You know, what do you do? I probably do put the title on Adam Cole. Matt Riddle, instead, is going to challenge Velveteen Dream for the North American Championship. I saw Matt Riddle on Twitter was answering the call from Kurt Angle about, oh, who should my opponent be in my retirement match at WrestleMania? Matt Riddle has thrown his name into the hat. Matt Riddle wants to retire Kurt Angle, and he wants to retire Brock Lesnar. And as big of a Matt Riddle fan as I am, even I think that that is ridiculous. Of course, it's not going to happen. He's already being promoted for a match that weekend. They're not going to pluck him out of NXT. There's a lot of fans who don't know who he is. So I would not take that tweet seriously. Of course, he would say that, but no, Kurt Angle's opponent will not be Matt Riddle, nor should it be. But we have Aleister Black and Ricochet. They beat the Forgotten Sons at the tapings to win the 2019 Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. They will go on now to challenge the War Raiders for the tag titles at TakeOver. And you just look at this TakeOver card that they have here so far. War Raiders defending the tag team titles against Aleister Black and Ricochet. It's going to be a great match. Pete Dunne defending the NXT UK title against Walter. That's going to be amazing. Velveteen Dream and Matt Riddle for the North American title. That should be really good. Shayna Baszler defending her NXT Women's Championship in a Fatal 4-Way against Bianca Belair, Kairi Sane, and Io Shirai. That's going to be excellent. And then, of course, Johnny Gargano challenging Adam Cole for the vacant NXT Championship. 2 out of 3 falls. New champion guaranteed to be crowned. I'm glad I got my ticket. Originally, I had to choose. I was going to Madison Square Garden for Ring of Honor and New Japan and not going to the NXT show. And then WWE moved it to a different night. They basically flipped this in the Hall of Fame. And there were people at the time who even were giving WWE shit for doing that. And I never understood that. Yeah, you could say, well, maybe there's some kind of ulterior motive here. To my knowledge, all of these shows are either near sold out or sold out. So it's not a case where WWE was worried they weren't going to be able to pack them in at the Barclays Center. If they're not sold out, they're probably pretty close. They didn't want the fans to choose. That was the line from Triple H. We didn't want to make the fans choose, so we moved the show. I applaud them for that. Now I get to go to both shows. That makes me very happy. But the lineup here is, on paper, one of the best lineups that you could possibly ask for. One of the best takeover lineups maybe in a long time. I am sad, though, that it looks like we aren't going to get that Keith Lee Dijak match. You know what I could see them doing, though? We might get it after all. There may not be any more room on the main card, but they always tape a couple of matches at the building before they go on the air for TakeOver. Maybe that's where they're going to do it. Maybe we'll get Dijak and Keith Lee at the Barclays Center, but we'll get it at the television taping before TakeOver that will air the following Wednesday. So we might still get to see it that night in the building, I'm hoping. Also at the tapings this past week, Chelsea Green made her Full Sail debut in a dark match against Jessie Eliban, but she broke her wrist in the middle of the match. She finished the match, and she won with the broken wrist, but she did break her wrist. She had to undergo surgery the next day, so she's going to be out for a few months. It sucks to get hurt in your debut like that, but hey, at least she won. ACH, former ACH from Ring of Honor, he made his NXT debut. He was not as lucky as Chelsea when it comes to who wins and losses. He lost to Humberto Carrillo, And he is no longer ACH. He used his real name here, Albert Hardy Jr. Hopefully that's temporary until they come up with something a bit cooler than Albert Hardy Jr. No offense. As far as the TV show this past week, the Forgotten Sons beat Mustache Mountain to advance to the finals of the Dusty Classic. I was very disappointed to see that Trent Seven and Tyler Bate did not advance. I really was hoping for a match in the finals with the two of them against Aleister Black and Ricochet, but we can't all have nice things. Io Shirai and Bianca Belair went to a no contest when Shayna Baszler, who was doing commentary, she stormed down to the ring, laid everybody out. She choked out Bianca Belair. Kairi Sane ran down to make the save. She got choked out. Io Shirai came in the ring. She got choked out. Regal, later on, William Regal, made a fatal four-way for TakeOver for the championship with all four women. Literally, anybody could win that match. When I look at this and try to make a prediction, and it's still early for the predictions, but I look at this match, and really, any one of these four women can walk out with the title. If Shayna is being called up, it makes it more likely that she loses, but even if she gets called up, that's not a guarantee she's going to lose the championship. We've had champions get called up before, and then vacate the title, or what's that word they like to use? Abdicate. Abdicate the title. What was that other word they used? Oh, in abeyance. That's right. Yes. That's right. So, Shayna Baszler could very easily win this match, regardless of whether or not she's going to be called up the next night. I'll say this much. If Ronda Rousey, and there's been a lot of rumors about it, is she staying? Is she going? She's under contract until 2021, so she's not going anywhere else. But is she taking a break? Is she going to start a family? Is she not taking a break? If she does leave after WrestleMania, even if just for a few months, take a little vacation. And if Becky Lynch wins the championship, as I expect her to at WrestleMania, who better? Who better than Kenya? No, who better than the next night to attack Becky than Shayna Baszler? Ronda's best friend, Shayna Baszler. Problem with that, do you have Shayna lose in her first feud on the main roster, or does Becky get what Finn got with the IC title and get herself a 3-week title reign and then have to chase all over again? That's the only argument for not doing Becky and Shayna so soon. You know, but who else on the Raw roster? And I know they're going to do a shakeup in April, so this is all probably just a moot point if they're going to shake the rosters up. But as things stand right now, who else makes for an appealing first opponent for Becky Lynch? Let's be honest here. It's probably going to be Charlotte, because this will be the never-ending feud. So it'll probably be Becky and Charlotte. But if it's not Charlotte, then who is it? Ember Moon is probably not going to be ready. She's still out hurt after her elbow surgery. Maybe Vince will put a dress on EC3 and call him Ethel instead of Ethan and let him challenge for the women's title. That'll show him. Can't be any worse than what they have him doing now. Aleister Black and Ricochet. Actually, it's St. Patrick's Day. Let me say this the right way. Aleister Black and Rick O'Shea beat DIY to advance to the finals of the Dusty Classic. This was an excellent match. I would expect nothing less from these four. Gargano seemed to hurt his knee late in the match, or so we were led to believe. When Ciampa tried to tag out, Gargano was nowhere to be found. He was sitting on the outside, unable to stand. Black hit him with the Black Mass kick. Ricochet hit the 630 for the win. Candice ran down to help her husband. Ciampa helped him up as well. They were walking to the back. And just as Ciampa was about to throw him into the LED board, Gargano pumped the brakes, and instead he sent Ciampa into the LED board and kicked him in the face. He showed off that his leg was fine. It was all just a ruse. And he and a smiling Candice stood over Ciampa to end the show. Really sucks that they could not pay this story off properly in Brooklyn. It's just played out for so long now, but the new match should be just as good, if not better. Time for the mailbag. If you have questions, you can email them to me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Rick, in Pembroke Pines, Florida, do you feel after the angle with Drew McIntyre on Raw that WWE is exploiting Roman Reigns and his illness? You know, that didn't bother me. I guess they were trying to play off the whole, like, You know, he's all glassy-eyed, or you okay? Rollins came down. He was very concerned about him. Clearly, they were playing off that. That didn't bother me. The question is, are they exploiting his cancer? Well, I don't know. You tell me. I checked this morning. When I pulled your question, I checked this morning. And right now, as of this morning, on WWEshop.com, I counted 12. 12 Roman Reigns items that bear his cancer logo with the orange ribbon. Shirts, tank tops, hoodies, those silicone cancer bracelets. All for sale, none of which have any mention anywhere of a portion of the proceeds, a percentage of the proceeds are going to this cancer charity or that cancer charity. Nothing. Are they exploiting his cancer? Yes. Bobby in Jacksonville, Florida. I was watching Memphis wrestling in the mid-80s where the Macho Man Randy Savage was wrestling Rick Rude. Did they ever wrestle each other in the WWF? I don't think they ever did. I don't remember any matches between the two of them. I mean, it's possible they had some house show matches, but that's a good question. I don't know. I don't think they ever did, not in WWF. David, in Peekskill, New York. Until recently, I had no idea that Missy Hyatt once worked for WWE. I remember her from WCW and know she had a stint with ECW, but never WWE. Did you know about this? And if so, why was she never on television? I learned about this years ago, and I was very surprised to find out about it like you were. But yes, Missy Hyatt did indeed work for WWE for all of 2 months, I think it was. This was around the time of WrestleMania 3. She was with Eddie Gilbert at the time. They were dating. They were working UWF. She got the call from Vince McMahon to come on up for an interview. Eddie went with her. And Gilbert opted not to go with her. I don't know if he had an open spot in WWE waiting for him as well, but he opted to stay because I guess he was interested more in booking and not just wrestling, and that just wasn't something that was on the table with him in WWE. So she went with the idea that she was going to host a talk show segment to replace Piper's Pit. Vince McMahon, he knew that Roddy Piper was on his way out after WrestleMania. I mean, his match with Adrian Adonis was billed as a retirement match at WrestleMania 3. And he needed somebody, he felt, to replace Piper. And he thought, well, why not a beautiful woman like Missy Hyatt? So they brought her in for a segment called Missy's Manor. They taped a bunch of these Missy's Manor segments for TV. She interviewed big names for it. Harley Race, the Honky Tonk Man, Macho Man Randy Savage and Elizabeth together, Bobby Heenan, and I think one or two others. The segments were taped for television, but they were so horrendously bad that they just never made the air. I don't think any of these aired anywhere. But Missy got all of the segments. She probably went to them and, you know, and said, hey, can I have them? And they gave her the footage. She has all the segments, and she put them up on her old YouTube channel. She hasn't uploaded anything. I checked her YouTube channel hasn't been updated with any new videos in 5 years. But the segments are all up there if you want to see them. It's actually on the same YouTube channel. She posted a home movie from when she and Eddie Gilbert were together. Them just hanging out by the pool at home. And Paul Heyman is there. A young Paul Heyman. If you ever wanted to watch a young Paul Heyman ride down a water slide, then boy, do I have the YouTube channel for you. You could just go watch it there. But the idea that Missy Hyatt was going to replace Rowdy Roddy Piper and Piper's Pit, like you watch these videos and then think about the idea that she was going to be the big replacement for Piper after you watch these things. That would be like AJ Styles announcing his retirement and WWE rehiring Enzo Amore to take his place. It would be a crime against humanity. You just would not do it. No sane person would do it. After the first few of these, Vince knew that it wasn't working. He said, look, I want you to stand up off the couch and start showing off your legs more. When you introduce these people before they come out, she was sitting on the couch, stand up. Show off more of your legs, because he thought she has great legs. So in some of the later ones, she's clearly showing off her legs. That didn't work either. Vince realized, okay, look, this isn't working. I mean, look, when they film half a dozen of these things and they never air them, that tells you all you need to know. So he wanted to make her a ring girl. Like one of those ring girls you would see on the pay-per-views, the ones who would open and close the ropes on those little mini carts like at WrestleMania 3 that were bringing people to and from the ring, or who would collect the men's ring jackets before a match. She thought that that's beneath her, and she had no interest in being a ring girl, and she went back to the UWF. The funniest part of this entire thing, if you do go back and watch these videos, because I went back and I watched all of them, and they really are, just for the most part, they are completely unwatchable. But at the end of one of the Missy's Manor with the Can-Am Connection, Rick Martel and the Z-Man himself, Tom Zenk. And God bless Rick Martel, he belongs in the Hall of Fame yesterday. And he went on to become a great heel. But the Can-Am Connection had the personality of a doorknob. So this segment was doomed to fail from the moment they walked out. But in the final seconds of the Can-Am Connection one, when Missy walks off with them to go do God knows what, it's like the last 5 seconds of the video, you can clearly hear some little kid in the background call her a fucking bitch. That's not very nice. I shouldn't laugh. That's not very nice. It just kind of came out, it caught me off guard, especially back then. You might expect something like that today, or even during the Attitude Era. I remember Ivory, when she was part of Right to Censor, she was on the stage, and she had a microphone in her hand, and she was talking about, you know, incivility and all the things that Right to Censor would talk about. And then it was quiet. The crowd wasn't really booing. They weren't really saying much. So it only amplifies that one guy when he speaks up. You hear him that much more. And in the middle of this promo that Ivory is cutting about all these issues, you hear this one guy go, "Take your top off." And it's just, everybody heard it. You can't ignore it. So you would expect something maybe during that era. But here, you know, what year would this have been? 87, I guess. Yeah, I was caught off guard by this young man, this little boy, calling Missy Hyatt a fucking bitch. So yes, if you want to see that and all the other videos, they are up on YouTube right now. And you can go. They're not great, but they're worth watching at least once. Nick from Houston. Good to hear from Nick. I hope he's holding up well. He says, "I was reading about Tommaso Ciampa in the NXT title. I wonder why they always have to strip them of their titles when they get injured. Wouldn't it make for a built-in story to crown an interim champion? Especially if they were going to give it to Johnny Gargano just to piss off Ciampa when he comes back. Both having the belt and leading to a ladder match like Shawn and Razor in 94. What do you think? Keep stripping them or crown an interim champion?" I lean more towards just vacating the title because these injuries tend to keep these guys out for a very long time. And not every story would work for this, like Ciampa and Gargano. I think with Ciampa and Gargano, you could have had Ciampa holding Goldie hostage and refusing to give it back, and Regal just makes the call to crown an interim champion this one time. And then build to the natural Gargano-Ciampa title unification match when he's ready to come back. The interim champion angle would have worked, I think, like a charm here in this storyline. But generally speaking, I'm a big fan of vacate, crown a new champion, whether it's a singles match, a tournament, a battle royal, and not just handing a title to somebody like they did with Triple H. Oh, I guess they created one. They created a title out of thin air and handed it to Triple H in 2002. I'm not a fan of that either. But I tend to lean more on that side. I generally prefer that. They also kind of did the interim title thing with John Cena and CM Punk in 2011. You know, when Punk won the title and he walked out for all of a week, they crowned a new WWE champion. I don't think they called it an interim title, but that's basically what it was. When Punk came back a week later, it set up Cena against Punk to crown the real champion, the undisputed champion, at SummerSlam. I think that works in very specific situations. It's not a solution every time somebody gets hurt. Then you just end up with too many interim champions and you end up becoming UFC. There was an article last month about this very topic on UFC and its interim titles on Yahoo. There was an article about this and how they're mostly meaningless. They feel the need to create them in a lot of cases because they have title fights on. They have to have a title fight on pay-per-view. even when the champion is hurt and they can't fight. So what do? You create an interim title. Or if there's a champion, maybe he's not hurt, but he's not defending the title. A long time has gone by. You're not going to strip him. What do? They create an interim title. And they've been doing a lot of this. And the point of the article was, it's gotten to the point where the whole concept now in UFC of an interim title feels kind of meaningless because they've just done it so often. Apparently in boxing, the interim title stuff is even more laughable. When you abuse it, it turns into a joke. Think of how many injuries we've had in WWE, not all champions, but I could see where it could very easily, very quickly get out of control, and then these interim titles are a joke. They don't mean anything. You never want your titles to be a joke. Billy in Des Moines, I've been rewatching The Sopranos on Amazon Prime recently, and I know that is one of your all-time favorite shows, along with The Shield. With that said, buy or sell on the more shocking, heartbreaking, soul-crushing murder, Lem's murder or Adriana's murder? Oh boy, these are all bad people. The strike team on The Shield, they were bad people. Pretty much everybody on The Sopranos was bad. I guess Adriana really wasn't bad. She just chose to associate herself with the wrong people. But her death, I will say, her death is still the one that bothers me the most to this day. Buy on Adriana, sell on Lem. Billy wrote in the names in his email, he wrote in the names of the people who murdered them. I took them out because I don't want to give away all of the spoilers here in case somebody does decide to watch either show, especially The Shield. That was one of the most shocking scenes in the entire series. And that was pretty bad too. But the Adriana thing, you just feel bad for her. I felt sorry for her. That's one of the most memorable scenes from any television show ever. I'd even throw one more here into the pot. Hank from Breaking Bad. The three best shows ever made: Sopranos, Shield, and Breaking Bad. But they all gave me ulcers. I love these shows so much, but they all gave me ulcers. You keep telling yourself, it's just a television show, dude. It's just a television show. But it still screws with your emotions. It plays with your head.
What did we just see? What did we just see? It's WrestleMania, baby!
Top 10 most shocking WrestleMania match outcomes. For as long as I have been a WWE fan, stretching all the way back to 1986, early 87, and all of the WrestleMania shows that I've ever watched, which is all of them, I had never actually been to a WrestleMania before at this point. I was in the basement of Madison Square Garden a few days before WrestleMania 10, meeting Vince McMahon and Shawn Michaels and Tatanka and Ted DiBiase and Fred Blassie and Lou Albano and all of these people at the very first fan festival that they ever did. But we couldn't afford tickets to the actual WrestleMania show, so I watched it at my grandparents' house. WrestleMania 20, I don't know. I just opted not to go. I don't know why. So here I am, right? A New Yorker my entire life and didn't go to either one of those WrestleManias. And I finally get to go to my very first WrestleMania in Miami. Not a bad place to be. That was WrestleMania 28. And number 4 on my list is Daniel Bryan defending the World Heavyweight title against Sheamus, the winner of the 2012 Royal Rumble. Not counting pre-show matches, this was the very first live WrestleMania match in person that I ever saw. And it was over before I could say, what the hell just happened? Now, the year before, to really get the full scope of the story here, you got to go back 1 year earlier. Bryan and Sheamus were scheduled to wrestle for the United States Championship at WrestleMania 27. They got bumped off the card. In his book, you can get Daniel Bryan's book for free. You can use our Audible trial. AudibleTrial.com/Solomonster. There's the link again. But you read Bryan's book when he talks about this, you could feel the frustration from him in getting bumped off the main card to a dark match, and a 3-minute one at that. 3-minute dark match. And then having to sit in the back during WrestleMania that year and watch Snooki wrestle and watch Michael Cole wrestle Jerry Lawler. By the way, I use that word wrestle very lightly when it comes to those two cases. He's got to sit in the back and watch this nonsense. He and Sheamus both found out about what had happened with their match being bumped in the middle of a talent meeting backstage at Raw 6 days before WrestleMania. Nobody pulled him aside in private and said, hey guys, listen, sorry. They found out about it like everybody else did in the middle of this meeting. They did not even bother to just privately pull them aside and give them the bad news. Say, hey, look, I know we were advertising this, which they were. They were already advertising the match for the main show, but you guys got bumped. So they find out about it in this meeting. Sheamus is just distraught. He was on the WrestleMania card the year before against Triple H. Now he's not even on the show. Brian half expected to be bumped off anyway. And in the book, he does acknowledge, he does say, look, you know, WrestleMania is a spectacle. It is not a wrestling show. William Regal once told him, he said, wrestling is what you did before this. Anything you do after is a bonus. He understood that. Didn't do a whole lot to make him feel better, but he understood that. Now, flash forward a few months. Brian wins Money in the Bank in what you could call, I guess, the summer of Punk. The second summer of Punk. 2005, I guess, would be the first summer of Punk in Ring of Honor. After that, he's the Money in the Bank winner. What does he do? He goes to SummerSlam. He loses to Wade Barrett. I don't even think he made it on to the next couple of pay-per-views that came after that. He told me when I interviewed him before WrestleMania the following year that WWE didn't even fly him in to some of the shows. The Vengeance pay-per-view where Mark Henry and Big Show broke the ring, there were fans chanting and waiting for him to come out and cash in his briefcase, and he said he couldn't because he was sitting at home in Vegas. They never even flew him into the show. But at this point he had claimed on television in storyline he was going to wait until WrestleMania to cash in his Money in the Bank. That's what he said. And then at the TLC pay-per-view in December, he changed his mind. He went back on his word, like any good heel, and he cashed in on Big Show to win his very first world title in WWE. Now, WrestleMania 28 comes along here. It's going to be Daniel Bryan and Sheamus for the World Heavyweight title. You open WrestleMania here, not only with a world title match, which they did that at least once before with Edge and Alberto Del Rio, so it's not like it's the first time that's ever happened. This might have been the second time. Not only that, but you open the show with the winner of the Royal Rumble? I mean, there was no chance in hell that Sheamus was going to be headlining WrestleMania the same year as Rock versus Cena. But it's laughable how they pass it off as, oh, you're winning a trip to the main event of WrestleMania, and then the man ends up curtain jerking the pay-per-view. But they really didn't stand a chance that year. They had Rock against Cena. You had Undertaker and Triple H. End of an era. Hell in a Cell. Not sure what era ended since they ended up having a bunch of more matches, but end of an era, Hell in a Cell. And you also had Chris Jericho on that card challenging CM Punk for the WWE title, which had a decent build to it at least. Bryan and Sheamus had no build. Sheamus won the Royal Rumble. He picked Daniel Bryan. He wanted to challenge him for the world title. And that was it. That was the story. So, it really, looking back, should not have been much of a surprise that they got slotted where they did. But it was a surprise to the two of them. 2 weeks before the show, Chris Jericho goes over to Bryan backstage. He goes, hey, are you guys having a really short match? Bryan had no idea what he's talking about. He had figured, no, we're going to be wrestling for the world title. We should probably be getting at least 20, 25 minutes. Jericho says, well, you know, I was in the writer's room and I saw in the listing, they had you guys listed for eight minutes, which after entrances, it's not 8 minutes. It's more like 5 minutes or it's not eight. So Bryan goes, he finds Arn Anderson, the newly unemployed Arn Anderson, to find out what's going on here. And Arn wasn't sure. He said, look, you guys should be getting 25 to 30 minutes. You're in the world title match. And Bryan says, great, that's perfect. That's what I thought. Because the two of them, they were looking for redemption here after what had happened to them the year before. So about a week goes by. Arn finds Bryan, pulls him aside and says, listen, I got bad news. You guys are having a one-move match. Bell's going to ring. You're going to kiss AJ Lee, not Styles. The gay community? And then Sheamus is going to kick you in the face and pin you. He and Sheamus were furious. So was Arn. He said Arn was just as pissed off as they were. Even the day of the show when the match was over at WrestleMania, Brian said Great Khali came up to him in the back in his broken English and just goes, "What happened? This is bullshit. What happened?" I wish I could have been there to see that. So now it's WrestleMania weekend in Miami. I got to sit down with Brian 2 days before. He was the first person they brought over for interviews that morning. Ironically, the second person they brought over that morning for interviews was Kofi Kingston. I mean, here we are now 7 years later. But he told the same story to me about being left off the WrestleMania card with Sheamus the year before. And then he said, you know, if I retain my title at WrestleMania, I'm going to push to have them create a hemp belt for me to wear. That's some long-term booking right there. That is some heavy foreshadowing, let me tell you. So then we get to the match itself. WrestleMania 28. And they open the show. And Brian is in one corner. Sheamus is in the other corner. Yes signs all over the place. The fans are going crazy. Mainly for Brian. They're going nuts. They're pumped. They're ready for this. Bell rings. Brian puts his arms out and says, "Wait. Hold on a second." He motions for AJ Lee to get up on the apron. She gets up on the apron. He plants a wet one on her. And as soon as he turns around, he gets brogue kicked right in the face. He eats a brogue kick. To this day here, and we're in 2019 now. This was 2012. I have to say that the brogue kick remains one of the most protected finishes in the entire company. Very rarely, if ever, have I seen... I mean, it's happened, I guess. It's had to have happened before, but... rarely do you see somebody get bro kicked where Sheamus then goes for the pin and doesn't get it. When he kicked Brian in the face, everybody should have known it was over. I'm just watching this. I'm stunned. I'm going, "Wait, what the hell's going on here?" He covers him. 1, 2, 3. And everybody goes nuts. I'm sitting up in the press box. We were able to move our seats later in the show. We ended up sitting in the friends and family section, so we're The Rock's mom is there, and all these Samoan-looking people are there. We had great seats at WrestleMania that year. We're up in the press box, and I'm looking down at this, and there are photos of me sitting in the press box, and I have this look on my face like I just saw a ghost. I'm like, "What the fuck just happened? Are you kidding me?" I was looking forward to that match a lot, and 18 seconds later, like that, it was over. I was angry. The crowd didn't seem very angry. I'm sure there were pockets of people who were pissed off, but you look at the way that crowd reacted, they exploded. Everybody went nuts for the finish. And a funny thing happened. It succeeded in being a launching pad for the whole Yes movement. Even if that wasn't what WWE had intended, and I'm 100% sure it wasn't. That wasn't their goal. What they had intended was to break the record that Kane and Chavo Guerrero had set at WrestleMania 24 for the shortest match, which was something like 11 seconds. Now, when I say launching pad for the Yes movement, the Yes chants were already there. If you watch the match back, there's tons of Yes signs in the first 10 rows. But the Yes thing after this just exploded. At Raw the next night, this was the same night that one of the biggest stars in the company made his grand return. Of course, I'm talking about Lord Tenzai. Brock Lesnar also made his return to WWE that night after 8 years away, and that was kind of a big deal. But being in the building that night is the American Airlines Arena, and watching people lose their minds when Brock Lesnar came out and beat up John Cena, it was great. But the reaction for Daniel Bryan when the show was over, when they were off the air, they had a dark match, six-man tag team dark match. The reaction for Bryan when his music hit and he came out was unlike anything I had ever seen before. Bryan, he was relegated that night to a single backstage segment on TV, and he didn't even speak. He stared down the announcer, never said a word. That was the extent. That was his role on Monday Night Raw, the night after WrestleMania. He was like EC3, but without the nice tan. So all of this other stuff here happened off the air. All these people are chanting yes in unison, throwing their fingers up into the air. I know that became commonplace, but this was the first time that we had really seen anything like this. And it's one of those kind of experiences you look back on and you just, from the bottom row, the front row, to the very top of the nosebleeds, everybody just in unison. It was like this unbelievable thing I had not seen before. Unless you were at like a soccer game or something. I'm talking like a WWE shows, right? You'll have a guy who comes out like Brock did that night or Stone Cold back in the day. Every fucking night Stone Cold would come out. Still to this day, nobody got pops like Steve Austin. You know, but he would get like a big reaction. Everybody would be cheering and taking pictures and putting up the middle finger. But this was just a different type of reaction where everybody just seemed to be in sync behind this guy. A heel, 5'8". Never did anything of any note with this guy. He's a heel, not a babyface. And you look out into this crowd and it's like, what the hell's going on here? And I'm looking in the ring. Big Show's already in the ring. Randy Orton's already in the ring. They're looking at each other. They're laughing. They're looking out at the crowd and the reaction like, you know, what is this? Like, I've been here for years. I've never gotten a reaction like this before. We've been here how many years? We've never got this kind of response. But it was Big Show, Randy Orton, and Sheamus against Daniel Bryan, Kane, and Cody Rhodes. And of all the people to take the losing fall, naturally, who was it? Daniel Bryan, pinned by Sheamus. What else is new? But looking back, you know, that 18-second loss did more to turn Daniel Bryan into a main event player than any wrestling match he had ever had up to that point in WWE. 2 years later, he was standing there with two belts and a confetti bath to close out WrestleMania. Funny enough, Vince McMahon's original plan for WrestleMania 30 was to have Daniel Bryan wrestle Sheamus, fifth from the top, at best. It's like Groundhog Day with these two. But WWE not booking Bryan in the Royal Rumble match that year turned the fans against Batista through no fault of his own. They shit all over him. He became Bootista. And then Blutista. And now he's give me what I want, Batista. But that screwed up their plans. And then, of course, CM Punk walking out the next day really screwed up their plans. So Daniel Bryan ended up being the beneficiary of some very bizarre circumstances that put him in the main event of WrestleMania. But his match at WrestleMania 28, that really was the catalyst for it all. And the finish of that match was genuinely shocking. As somebody who was there and who felt it amongst all the people cheering, they were stunned because nobody saw that finish coming that night. Next week, we crack the top three of the WrestleMania countdown. Keep sending in those questions, thesolemonster@gmail.com. And definitely use that Audible link. I've mentioned a couple of different books this week that are worth picking up with our link, and you can use the Solemonster code if you're setting up a brand new Lyft account. Get yourself a discount off your first ride with Lyft. Just use the code Solemonster. You guys know this already. I'll be back with a brand new podcast next Sunday. That'll be episode 591. Next week, really, for me, this time of year, is going to be a rough week, but we'll be back with a brand new show, as we always have. That's next Sunday. Until then, be well, stay safe. Please RSVP to the Facebook invite for our meetup on April 5th. If you have not already done so, I hope to see all of you there. And I will see you back here for more Sound Off next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solemonster sounds off.
I'm just saying, I don't know, with New Day, you got three black guys out there. Why Francesca?
You want to call it Tyrone the Trombone?
Okay. That's racist.
Well, no, it's...
Racist, no.
I'm not racist. Go to Hulk Hogan for that. That's not me.
You know, usually the people that go, I'm not racist, yeah, right. Those are the racists.
Solemonster sounds off.
Since 2007, the Solemonster sounds off. Available at thesolemonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solemonster sound off.